Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck having another beautiful day in my consciousness and really excited by our topic today. But first,
here's Reverend Dr. Cher Holton coming to you from Durham, North Carolina, and it is definitely another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And this is the Reverend Doc Bill Holton, also at the Durham End, and it is very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness as well. And as you guys know, Cher and I are the co-founders of an online Zoom ministry, and our ministry is the Unity Center for UniversalProsperity.org, and we spell universal, Y-O universal, because it is about your human happiness and spiritual growth.
Yay. And we invite you to visit us at ucfyp.org, where you'll find all kinds of fabulous information and you can sign up for our Monday Musing newsletter.
Yeah, and the newsletter is really worth getting.
Oh, thank you.
I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where I have my calendar. And that's where I post my weekly blog, The Absolute Word. And wow. We may be really good metaphysicians and really good with human stuff, but if we were smart, really smart with finances, we would have invested in Zoom when the pandemic hit.
Yeah,
so true.
Oh, don't we wish we had?
Oh my gosh. This technology is just flabbergasting. Anyway, so today we're going to be sharing with you another article from Medium. And Medium is a subscription service. I think they have a free piece too. What they are is, quote unquote, a blog aggregator. And they have some fancy AI going in the background that they actually feed you stuff that you tend to click on. So you don't get a lot of junk. Anyway, so this one Cher found in her sleuthing way. And the title is, You Can't Wait Until Life Isn't Hard Anymore Before You Decide to Be Happy. And I have to tell you, folks, that grabbed me immediately because that's a quote I remember from that program or an episode of AGT, America's Got Talent, and an amazing young woman who has now moved on to parts unknown is the author of that quote. And she sang a song which was flabbergasting. Cher, you want to take it away?
Wow, I'll be delighted to. And the author of the article is Tim Denning, and we've used his material before because we like his approach. And he starts the whole article out by sharing that story that Paul was just referring to. And do we want to read that?
I think giving the context is really important.
Yes. And I will be putting a link to this event that he refers to. I'll put links on the website so you can go and find it if you haven't heard it, if you didn't happen to hear it.
Excellent.
So he starts out saying in 2001, Simon Cowell, and everybody's heard of Simon Cowell, right?
because of what he's going to say here.
Yeah. He became famous after he got a gig as a judge on American Idol. He had a habit of being horrendous to people and commenting on their looks. Recently, Simon made headlines when he started crying on America's Got Talent after a choir performance of all things. How times have changed. The once rude man is now a big softy. Well, what made him cry is that this choir performed a song by now deceased singer Nightbird, who died of cancer. And this happened on American Idol also. These are two different episodes. And Nightbird was one of the candidates. And he goes on to say, about a year ago, Nightbird performed on the same popular TV show and left a lasting impact.
Yeah. So this is on AGT, Americans Got Talent.
Right.
Yeah.
She casually, and I remember we saw this, and I think you did too, Paul.
I did too.
Yeah, when she performed. She just casually told the live audience and judges that she was battling cancer, and then she sang her own original song. And it was one of the best performances you'll ever see. I believe she actually got Simon's gold buzzer.
She did.
She did.
Yeah. Well, when it came to comment, the judges were speechless. At one point, she revealed, I only have a 2% chance of survival, but 2% is not 0%. 2% is something, and I wish people knew how amazing it
is. Well, so that blew my mind when I saw that on the episode. And reading this again just put me right back there. This woman had such spirit and such life in the midst of this diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Really? She really did. And she just connected with everybody. Her emotional connection with people was amazing. It was not a victim consciousness at all.
Not a victim.
It was a thriving consciousness.
And then one of the things, the very next thing she said, which Cher will refer to, is the title of our program today.
Yes. During one long pause, she said, quote, "You can't wait until life isn't hard anymore before you decide to be happy."
How profound.
So that moment, and even now, is one of those comments. It was like, my mind went to stillness.
Yes.
And this is really what we teach. This is why we're sharing this. And I've had my moments. And I know Bill and Cher have had their moments when it would have been easy to live in victim consciousness.
Yes. Yes.
And we chose not to. I don't know if to the extent of this young lady, she was in her early 30s, but we've been there. We have lived this. And I took a series of courses and read a book called Happiness is a Choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that material, I really used it to change my life even before getting to Unity.
Wow.
And there's another V word that the three of us use instead of victim, and that's Victor.
Yeah. Victor.
Victor, yes. Consciousness.
And Verity.
And Verity.
And Verity. Yes. Yes.
Definitely.
So I want to say this again so people really hear it. You can't wait until life is not hard anymore before you decide to be happy.
Yeah. Right. Because happiness is a present moment choice.
Yes.
Each consecutive moment of now, you're choosing how you want to feel.
Yes.
So the author of this article just, he said it impacted him as well. He said he's been thinking about it for the past 12 months.
Yeah.
The path to happiness involves a few key ideas, which we want to just use for fodder for our conversation today.
Yeah. Shall we get started?
Yeah. I just have one comment before we do. We feel, the three of us feel, that your thoughts and words can be your wand, as they say. However, your positive, life-affirming, happy thoughts are your wandology.
Oh my gosh, read that again.
And that's what she is a proponent of. Your thoughts and words can be your wands. However, your positive, life-affirming, happy thoughts are your wandology.
Yeah, and I'm reminded of your latest saying I've heard a few times. You got to bring poise to the noise of life.
Yes.
The noise of life. Yeah.
You know, when she said about the 2% chance, when I think about this, there is such a thing, and scientists have proven this in a number of different health challenges, that there is such a thing as spontaneous remission.
Yes, there is. And I believe she was hanging on to that, whether she knew it or not.
Right. Yep. And well, she certainly made an impact, a lasting impact on people.
Yeah. So then he starts, you're allowed to be unhappy. And then he writes, wait, what? We're allowed to be unhappy. We're taught the end goal of life is happiness. To live happily ever after behind a white picket fence with a fur baby. But he believes being unhappy is part of being happy. I'm not sure I agree with this 100%. What I would say is you don't have to be unhappy to realize the value of happy.
Yes.
So that's the first thing. And unhappy might happen in your life.
And the power is, it's what's out. Unhappy things may occur.
Yeah.
It's how you choose to experience that.
Yes.
And to allow yourself, like grief, you know, that's not necessarily a happy thing, but you will feel that. It's part of the experience of love when you lose a loved one, and knowing that the happiness is and underwriting everything, that awareness and attitude of happiness.
Yeah, I think I would say it this way. Grief is an epiphenomenon of love. Grief is an epiphenomenon of love when someone we love disappears from our lives. Bill, you were about to say something?
Well, yeah, I just want to say that unhappiness is not a precondition of happiness. It happens, of course. Unhappiness happens, but each consecutive moment of now, irregardless of any unhappiness that may have preceded it, leads to happiness.
Yeah.
It's living in the now moment.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to remind listeners, I've said this before, back in 1991, my why became helping people help themselves become happier. Now, some people have heard that and they thought I meant what I want them to be happy about. Mm-hmm. And what I say is, I'm here to help you to be happier, and you decide what happier is.
Right. And it's an inside job.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
In fact, I think two powerful words, we always talk about I am and how powerful those words are. I choose. That's another two-word combo that's very, very powerful. And what do we say after that? I choose.
Yeah.
Whatever we choose affects our experience.
It absolutely does.
Yeah.
Okay, what's next?
So we're going to be selective in what we choose to share here. And he does talk about kids and what we can learn from children. And I think the key takeaway from that part is that we can learn how to live like kids in that general big experience of creativity and imagination. Because if you've ever been around children, they all believe they're creative.
Yes.
They believe that they use their imagination. I mean, there's the present in the box, and what do they get more out of? The box. They find all the ways to use the box. And I think what I would take away from this segment is just happiness is how do we use where we are and what we have to be creative and imaginative?
Yeah, and the thing is that I don't even know that they think they're being creative. They're just being creative.
Good point.
And it's like, can't we be that way still? I think we can.
Mm-hmm. We're so busy judging ourselves against other models unrealistically.
Yeah.
And it's just like everybody knows Bill and I are ballroom dancers. Well, if we compare ourselves to Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire, we'll never be happy dancing.
Yes.
I don't think we're ever going to get to that level.
And there's a lot of unhappiness in the world because people are watching short videos of other people's successes. But Cher, I think I heard you say this the first time, was we got to stop comparing our blooper reel to somebody's
highlight reel.
Highlight reel. Here you go. You had to have the word here because I learned it from you.
Yeah, right? I think that we do that all the time and we believe what we read. That's what's another thing. People, I hate to say this, but people lie. People stretch the truth. create spin stories. And
we don't know all the stuff they're doing to create that highlight reel.
Right.
And then how crappy they feel because of it. So it's like.
Yep.
Yeah.
And just realize that for every minute you're pessimistic or cynical, you lose 60 seconds of happiness.
There you go. There you go.
It is not worth it. Not worth it.
Not worth it at all.
So one other thing I'd say about comparison is overnight success, that term overnight success.
Yeah.
Most overnight successes have years of hard work
and years,
difficult times leading into it. So
years and years and years.
Yep. Very important to recognize. Okay. So another point he brings up is that millionaires reveal a hidden truth about happiness. Society tricks us into thinking millionaires are happy. So he shares a story from a guy named Key High, I guess it's a guy, a Harvard professor, who asked millionaires how much cash it would take for their happiness level to be 10 out of 10. The results from each group of millionaires are shocking. For the ones making 1 million, they said it had to be double to be a 10 out of 10. 2 million, double. 3 million, double. 5 million, double. 10 million, double.
Yeah. I mean, boy, is that a train I don't want to be on. In fact, one of my first partners in life when I lived in Puerto Rico, Turns out he was a millionaire. And one night, he made $6 million overnight. And I said, that's calling George. I said, George, do you have enough now? And he said, there will never be enough.
Wow.
And that was the first step towards my leaving that relationship. Wow. And because he lived a miserable life trying to crank out that 1 million, then 2 million, then 4 million, then 8 million. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And it is important, of course, to note that that is not true for every person who has $1 million. There are people who have very productive and positive attitudes around the money, but yeah. This is pretty, I mean, it's like a big group that was interviewed that got this.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it seems no amount of money will make a millionaire happy. That's a strong statement, but a majority of millionaires, we would say, happy. The thirst for more money grows as you make more money. And, you know, you can see that even in small amounts.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, whatever you have, you kind of create a lifestyle around a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then you want more to keep that lifestyle. And then it just sort of, it's like project creep.
it is like project creep. I think part of the secret to happiness is when you have sufficiency, that's the point where you start banking.
Yeah.
For retirement and for other things. It's so important.
That's just so smart and and so impossible.
Yeah. So I want to say this quote, then I'm going to change it. And that's going to be our tease for the next program. So he says, when I achieve X, then I'll be happy. I don't hear it that way. I hear it, I'll be happy when I achieve.
Yes.
And when you achieve that X, then there's another X.
There's always a win. I'll be happy when. We call it the win then game.
The win then game. Yes.
When I have that, then I'll be happy. Yeah.
Boy, is that a dark rabbit hole to go down.
It definitely is.
Yes, indeed. And so we don't go into a dark rabbit hole of an endless podcast today. It's time for us to rotate to the absolute word. The Absolute Word is based on Sunday messages appearing in Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And let me tell you, folks, grace is one of my favorite words. In fact, one of my favorite phrases is ease and grace.
Ease and grace.
So this comes from June 11th, and the affirmation is, I offer grace to others and myself. I say it that way because I no longer believe that God gives us grace. So here we go. The divine is principle, present in its entirety at every point in space at the same time. And of course, I had adapted from Eric Butterworth from Practical Metaphysics, A New Insight in Truth. And then I go on and say, I use principle to guide, make whole, and harmonize. I choose to give grace based on the principles of benevolence and generosity. At the very moment I may want to punish myself or someone else for a perceived transgression, I reach deep and choose grace for myself and others. I release any thought that I'm unworthy of grace. Nothing I can do or fail to do would disturb my divine identity. Grace is a simple choice. It cannot be earned or bought. Because principle cannot be used up, the grace I offer is inexhaustible. I can relax in complete trust because more will be available as I need it. I offer grace to others and myself. And so it is. And this is Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck saying goodbye. Thank you for listening. And thank you to my co-hosts.
Thank you, Paul. And thank you for letting us be a part of this. This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton saying thank you to all our listeners.
And this is the Reverend Doc Bill Holton. And for the three of us, we invite you to live with ease and grace each and every day.
Absolutely.